Hello and welcome to Yamaha Music's podcast, Artist Insights. My name is Phoebe Ely, and I'm going to be taking you behind the scenes to give you an exclusive insight into the lives and journeys of some of Yamaha's leading artists. On today's episode, I have got award-winning tuba player and composer Theon Cross, a core member of the Mercury-nominated group Sons of Kemet and a key player in London's thriving jazz scene. Theon's unique, innovative sound has created waves all over, reinventing the tuba worldwide. His debut EP, Aspirations, brought him international attention and garnered him a Jazz FM nomination for Best Jazz Newcomer in 2016. In 2019, he released his debut album, Fire, which was met with critical acclaim worldwide, charting at number one on the UK official jazz and blues charts. It earned high praise from major publications such as Rolling Stone magazine, Pitchfork, The New York Times and The Guardian, leading him to tour extensively throughout Europe, North America and South America. Theon, what an introduction. It's an absolute privilege to have you here today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
How have you found the last year? You've had quite a year.
It's been good. Straight out of the pandemic, I was able to get straight back to work, which was great. I released another album, After Fire, which is my latest album entitled Intra Eye. And Sons of Kemet's last album was released just before that as well. So I guess last year was a mixture of doing some of my own shows with my own band and doing my last remaining Sons of Kemet shows before we take a hiatus. So that's been good. And now just getting back to writing, going back in the studio again and doing some shows as well this year, which I'm looking forward to doing.
So I'd like to take you back, if I may, to an eight-year-old Theon. I wonder what did music look like for you then, and what are your earliest memories of picking up a horn and playing?
Yeah, 8 years old, correctly, is when I first started. And it was all by accident, really, because my parents signed me and my brother up, who's an amazing trombone player, up for brass lessons at our primary school. And I don't know why I was divided this way, but for some reason, most of the boys played brass and the girls played strings. Don't tell me. Ask me why. That's just what it was. I don't, not to, you know, put gender on these instruments, but that's how it was in my school. I had a teacher called Mr. Lydiard, great trumpet player, and he had different sized mouthpieces for the kids to play. Tuba wasn't even an option at this point because no kid in primary school can really play tuba unless they've got a decent size in them, which I didn't have at eight. He had like a trumpet, cornet, tenor horn, baritone horn, trombone, those type of instruments, and they're all rusty.
And he didn't said, fancy them.
I think they were left over from the school from the war.
Oh, wow.
I think the headmistress at the time, shout out Miss Winston, took these old instruments that were left over in the school and just hired someone to teach them, which, you know, worked out in my favor.
Oh, wow.
But he basically gave different kids different mouthpieces and said, whichever one you can buzz a sound out of is the one I'm going to teach you. So for my brother, that was the trombone. He buzzed a decent sound out of that and he was off. For me, it was an instrument called the tenor horn, which is like basically a soprano tuba. It's a really small tuba, essentially. But you hear it in brass bands. And for me, I actually didn't really enjoy it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's not really... Tenor horn
was
really an instrument. Yeah, it wasn't really an instrument that was well known, and it wasn't one that really grabbed me straight away. My brother was flying. He was the man of the house, really, in terms of music. He was the one.
Wow.
But I didn't really develop that quickly. And I think the mouthpiece for me just didn't feel that comfortable. So although I progressed with it, it wasn't until I started secondary school, which I had a really good music department, and I met my teacher called Mr. Morgan, who I think they didn't have any tenor horns left for whatever reason, so they upgraded me to a slightly bigger version called the euphonium or baritone horn. And I think the bigger mouthpiece just agreed with me more. I liked the vibration of it, and I loved it. That's when I started doing my grades. I did my first grade, done grade 8, grade 1 to grade 8, eventually through my school years. And then that teacher, Mr. Morgan, would recommend a lot of the good students or the ones that he could see were enjoying it, I suppose. He recommended that they go to a summer school called the Connecticut Blocko, which was a really fun, how would I describe it?
Workshop type thing.
Yeah, but I guess what was special about it, it was a carnival group.
Oh, cool.
So we'd be marching and we'd wear costumes and we'd be working with dancers and drummers and we'd play music.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, we played music that was like funky. Because I guess up to that point, I'd only really done like classical stuff, which was good. It was a good foundation to do the repertoire.
Yeah, I was going to ask you this because you were born and raised in London and it's obviously an international music hub worldwide. And I wondered how that impacted your early exposure to different types of music and informed the player you then went on to become. And it sounds like being exposed to things like getting to play this funky music in a carnival setting must have just been so inspiring at such a young age and opened your eyes to a different avenue as well as classical.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. It opened my eyes to different types of music. But I guess more importantly, it made me realise that I can play those types of different music on my instrument. Because I guess, I don't know, if you're teaching a young student like scales and arpeggios and their tuner days and things, I think they'll see themselves getting better, but they might not always see how it relates to the things that are interesting to them. So I think sometimes it's a mixture of like when you're teaching or just kind of introducing young kids, especially if they've got a short attention spans like I probably did. So like,
we all did.
To give them like something fun or something that they might enjoy, something that's relatable to them or what's, you know, music that is part of maybe their culture or music that they listen to at home or even with their friends. And thankfully, when I joined the Connecticut Blocko, I was able to engage in music that I also enjoyed, and it was also, you know, pretty technical to play as well.
I was going to ask you, what music did you grow up on? What was your family playing when you were younger?
Different things, really. My heritage is Caribbean, so my mum's side is St. Lucian music. My mum's side is St. Lucia, and my dad's side, he was Jamaican. So for my dad, you know, a lot of reggae and like roots reggae, people like Dennis Brown, Bob Marley, Barrington Levy, you know, Gregory Isaacs, but also like play me some dancehall stuff like Beanie Man and you know, Bounty Killer, people like that. But also, you know, like soul music, you know, like Marvin Gaye, like Michael Jackson, things like that. My mum, that's more on my mum's side of the family, I heard a lot more soca music, which is like what you hear at carnival, like Zouk music, which is music more popular on the French Antilles Islands. Also, I grew up a lot around my grandmother, and their generation loves country music. So,
you had such a mix. Yeah, that's so amazing.
So I heard a lot of country as well.
Gosh, do you remember your first time you heard classical music, and what was your introduction to that?
Very good question. As well as the Connecticut Blocko, which I did in the summer, every weekend, I also used to do the Lucian School's concert band, which was a concert band where we play like some classical repertoire, but also like film music and things like that. And I think I got introduced to classical music through that, joining the Lucian School's concert band where we play some orchestral things and music for film. But funny, I can't remember the first piece I ever played.
The first thing. What about, it's always the case, isn't it? What about jazz? Do you remember that? Did you have a first moment like that with jazz where you thought, whoa, this is something I really want to get into?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think my brother was the more gifted person naturally, I'd say. So I think he kind of tuned me into things. But I remember actually, one gig I went to when I thought, wow, this is incredible. This is a fantastic trombonist by the name of Dennis Rollins. He's a great trombonist from the UK. And he had a project called Boneyard, which was like, must have been like five or six trombones. And then my then teacher, Andy Grappi, teacher and mentor, I would say. They played like almost like gospel shout band type music, but on trombones and tuba. And I remember thinking, wow, that's so... That made me feel a certain way of really just wanting to get better, to express myself in that type of way. I must have been 11, 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a moment for me, I'd say.
Yeah, what a moment to realise that you can use that instrument in a completely different way to what was traditional, if you like. Must have really been a big kind of realisation for you as well. It's amazing. And am I right in thinking that Lewisham Music, which is a community music space near where you grew up, has named one of their music rooms after you?
Yeah, this is true.
That's amazing. How did that feel when you found that out?
Yeah, it was surreal, really. It was surreal because my mum had to force me to go. to be brutally honest. And not that I enjoyed it. Well, I think I began to enjoy it, but I didn't always necessarily see...
Initially at the start,
The benefit of, like, that discipline. And I think that place and that discipline and what I was able to do at those in that period of my life shaped who I am, really. And, you know, led me on to have the career and life that I have. So the fact that, you know, they were able to shape me in such a way that I could be, my name could be an inspiration to others is a bit surreal.
Yeah.
And I think it's a moment, you know, that I kind of take in and see as it's bigger than me and as an individual.
Absolutely. It's so rewarding just thinking that there might be a little Theon out there that's just working to be exactly have the same success that you've had. It's just incredible to have that legacy.
It's good. And I think, you know, it keeps me in check and kind of reminds me that, you know, my successes are just not for me. It's for other people that might want to aspire to the same thing. So it keeps me grounded. It keeps me disciplined, I'll say.
Yeah. Oh, it's so wonderful and such a gorgeous thing that they did. I'm so glad that you've got that in your name and that you're inspiring so many young musicians now. I wonder now, you went on to study jazz and classical music at the prestigious Guildhall School of Music and Drama. How did you find those years of formal training and how did they prepare you for the next stage of your career?
It was great. I think being in an environment where everyone is practicing the time is great. I think... it was an environment where you're literally with the most creative and most gifted people in the country, which is in some ways quite tough, and I definitely felt that. But it's very inspiring, and I think for me was a very good period for getting my self-discipline up, I would say, because you're in the company of, you know, some of the finest musicians your age and not just in the country, the world, you know, because it's a place that has international students as well. And I'm glad. The good thing is that I was able to get both sides of what I wanted. So I was able to have lessons in improvisation with the fantastic Oren Marshall, who's like one of the greatest tuba players in the world, and a friend and mentor as well as a teacher to me at that time. I also got to study with Patrick Harold, who's been the principal, first year for the LSO, and he was always great because he didn't let me off the hook too much. He didn't say, because you're a jazz musician, I'll let this slide. So in some ways, he kind of grilled me as much as some of his more principled students who went to him specifically. And that was good because it just gave me, told me what I needed to hear at that time. I think it was a very resourceful school as well. Whatever you wanted to learn and get, there was an avenue for you. So it was good for me, and just to be around musicians that are doing the same thing. You can, some of the networks of people that I've met while I was there, you know, are people that I run into and work with now. So for me it was a great experience, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you are surrounded by players at the same level, like you said, the top people in the country at the time, it's amazing what it then does for your own personal development and pushing you forwards. And It sounds like it was a really big place for you before you then went on to your incredible career that you've had. And I'm just looking, and you've paving the way for so many upcoming tuba players worldwide. And you've performed with an array of established artists, including John Batiste, Emily Sandé, Kano and Courtney Pine, to name but a few. I also recently saw that you got a massive shout out from the legend that is Iggy Pop on his show, playing your Blue Note reimagined version of Monk and Kenny Clarke's Epistrophe. How did you feel when you heard him say your name and describe you as a gift to the tuba? That must have been quite a moment.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Iggy Pop is a rock star.
Yeah.
You know, he's a legend and a rock star. So it was a real humbling moment. It was a moment I could really take in and think, wow, I'm doing something right.
So, absolutely, Eggy Pop said so. Wow. So,
no, it was really great and really humbled and appreciative to him for, you know, playing my music first and foremost, but also to compliment me on top. You know, it was a real great feeling it gave me.
Oh, God, it's incredible. It's so incredible. It just speaks volumes about how far you've come so quickly as well. And I'm wondering, out of all these huge names that you've played with, which experience stands out for you as the most memorable gig and why? It's like choosing between your children.
Yeah. It's just so many moments. I'm not sure if I can say which one was better or which one stood out more. I just think I can say in a way which ones were really memorable. I think playing with John Batiste was really great because I kind of got in touch with him very, very early in my professional career. And I just happened, me and my friend Ruben James, who's a fantastic.
I know Ruben.
Fantastic piano player. I think one day he was coming to London playing at, I can't remember which venue, but some venue in London. And we crashed the dressing room and we're just talking to him and playing to him and, you know, just asking him questions because this is when he was just taking off before he joined the Colbert Show. And I remember just like the spontaneity in which he would just get his melodica out and just teach you music. It was great. And then after, like, shortly after just kind of meeting him, he'd be like, okay, no, I'll come on stage. So I always just loved his, like, he just had the great spontaneity about him and a way of making, like, jazz and improvisation fun but performative for people as well. I think back then he had an album called Social Music, and he was basically saying, you know, jazz is the real term is social music because, you know, it comes out of socializing with people and social rituals. This is the origin of this music. So yeah, playing with him, and I think we've done a tour in Italy about 2014, me and my friend Ruben Fox at that time, and like some of his bands from the States. That was a memorable experience for me. He taught me a lot about how to be present and creative in the moment and remember that what we're doing is for ourselves, but essentially it's of a culture that is about socialism and socializing and creating moments with people.
Yeah, and connecting to people. And I'm wondering, the way you're speaking about that so eloquently, I wonder, how do you prepare mentally before going on stage for something like that? Is it through those sorts of conversations that you've had with him of, you know, this is bigger than just you, the performer. It's actually about connecting people through a message that you have to give. How do you personally view that?
Definitely. I think what you said there is on point. It's remembering that it's bigger than me. Remember that, you know, although it's about conveying the best musicianship and skill, it's about remembering, you know, there are people looking up to me, there are people who are inspired by me, and there are people that need this moment. They just need musicians. I think, I'm sure, like after the pandemic, when a lot of people aren't able to experience music and musicians, moments like these where people are just literally playing to enrich their present moment in time is something they appreciate, and it's something that I have to understand and be cognizant of. I'm channeling an energy which is bigger than myself, and I try to make sure that my music kind of represents themes that are important to me that I want to get across to the audience. So remembering that we're messengers of something a bit more profound than whether I play rights, wrong or right. We're channeling something a bit more profound and deep, which is, you know, of which come from a long lineage of things that have inspired me, which I would then inspire others. So,
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, I think what you said there kind of encapsulates how I kind of
what you feel.
Yeah, or rationalize it on myself of how I go on stage. Like, it's bigger than me, really.
It's so beautiful that you have that. It's you can hear it in your playing as well, I have to say. It's so beautiful. And you have had such a huge leap into a very successful career, Theon. And I'm wondering, what is the biggest personal obstacle that you've had to face to get to the point that you're at today?
I think when you say you want to be a jazz tuba player, at 14.
Well, yeah, at 15, wow.
It's kind of, I think, well, I guess to be fair, I didn't say I want to always specifically just do it every, like, kind of work out of the non-classical world with this instrument, but it was something that I deep down knew I wanted to focus more, like lean my career more towards. And I think, I guess if there's an obstacle, the obstacle might be that there are some great examples, but not many.
Yes, of people that have kind of
done that successfully. People like Howard Johnson, Bob Stewart, Red Callan, Lauren Marshall, these are people that have done it, but sometimes they're few and far between. So to be able to take the risk and say, oh, okay, I'm going to go this way. And then also to do it in a way where I'm relying on myself as opposed to waiting to be called for things. I think it's a risky thing, but and I think it takes a bit of self-belief and took a bit of, just understanding sometimes that people won't understand, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Almost a level of accepting that and making sure you understand that your art and your expression and what is important to you, you just have to make sure that, or understand that people sometimes will get it and sometimes they won't, but you just got to play to the people that do. I wouldn't necessarily say that, call that a hindrance, but I think it was definitely a state of mind that you have to enter for an artist, but specifically someone like myself who I don't know, some of what I do I classify as, you know, niche for specific ears and not for everyone, and that's fine. You know, you just have to play and work to whoever is on your side.
Yeah, that's so lovely. And I've been looking in back in mid-19 between a Sons of Kemet tour and the release of your first solo album, Fire.
Yeah.
I believe this is when you started to make your solo record and album, Intra-Eye. Yeah. So firstly, how on earth did you have the time to compose this amidst your crazy schedule? It blows my mind.
Well, a beautiful thing about finding the time is that some part of the album I'd started beforehand, so that was good. I'd kind of started towards the end of 2019, and then I guess after 2019 we know what happened, which was the pandemic. Which actually gave me lots of time to like really focus in on creating that project. And I guess what is great about that project, or what was useful about that project, is that it's all tuba for the most part and production. So I was able to get in with my producer, socially distanced, of course.
And get to
work and really build an album which was very much about representing the energy and the sound that emanates from the tuba alone and create a soundscape out of that. So, yeah, the pandemic was able to give me a lot of time and thinking space to really craft and conceptualize that piece of work.
Yeah, and what was the biggest source of inspiration for that piece of work?
Funny enough, the pandemic itself and the space and time to reflect about like who I am and what that means and where I'm coming from, and going within, essentially. Intra-I to me means going within, intro within, I representing self, whatever that means. The lessons that I kind of learned around that time ended up being part of the concepts of that record, which is, you know, the spiral, which is about going within yourself. We go again, you know, learning from past mistakes to go forward progression, you know, it's more on that concept. Having the time to think and go within myself, learn about myself away from the distraction of having to perform was nice for me. Sadly, my dad passed away early.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Early within, well, it must have been about March 2020. So,
yeah.
Although it was a sad time for me, I had time to reflect and grieve and put that energy into the music as well. I think in the state of mind of learning about self, grieving and reflecting on the journey of your parents, especially after they've deceased, was all part of channeling that energy into the music. It was having time to reflect about who I am, where I come from, and what I want to see and represent and show to others, which is part of the whole process of mixing all those elements into creating that album.
Yeah. Wow. Such a big journey you've been on, and so wonderful you were able to have that time to process during what sounds like a very difficult time personally and both professionally. The fact that you've channeled that is such a huge, huge example of how and why you're so successful, Theon. It's incredible what you've managed to do in such a short space of time, as I said. I'm wondering, with that in mind, who has been your biggest source of inspiration throughout your career and why?
Man, I think life in general.
Yeah.
Life and things that come your way, and like the good things, the bad things. I don't know, I think so far everything I've kind of made musically has been some type of response to the life I've lived and things that have been for the worse or the better, and I'm just reacting to it and channeling that emotion sonically or through an instrument. I guess as much of a
life.
Yeah, life itself.
That's such a good answer.
But
I've never had that answer before. That's amazing. So true, though. Yeah. It is, because like you said, things that come up in your life, you have to navigate, and it teaches you something and you learn a lesson. And then, you know, from that, you implement it into the player that you've become, which is just so obvious in your music. It's incredible. It's really incredible. Are there any non-musical inspirations that have influenced your playing, sort of growing up and then moving into your career that you've had as an adult? So obviously you use a lot of spoken word as well in your albums. And I just wondered if there was any sort of perhaps authors or people that have influenced you.
Specifically, I was reading a book called, although it's music related, but it was Sounds Like London, which is a great book by Lloyd Bailey. Kind of talking about, I guess really he's talking about the Windrush generation from our grandparents' migrations to the UK and the effect they've had up till now, and the music that's generated from them, then the next generation that they pass on to the next. Almost like a timeline of an experience, which has emanated music leading up to, you know, where I come in and my generation come in. And I think that was a good way of looking at where I sit within the continuum of immigrants, specifically from a London perspective. That was a book that was useful to me, and seeing myself in the picture of people that have come before me.
So incredible that you've had all of these sources that have created and helped you create this beautiful, gorgeous album, which is just exceptional. I had to listen to it and it's just incredible. I really... Kudos to you. It's incred.
Wow. Thanks very much.
I really enjoyed it. So one thing, Theon, that I do ask all my guests on the final question is, if you could give one piece of advice to an 18-year-old Theon, what would it be and why?
18-year-old Theon. Wow. I remember that guy. That's a really good question. Have confidence in your ability. That's what I'd say to him. Believe in yourself. you can do it. All of those things around that theme, just like, you can, if you put your mind to it and you work towards it, you can do it. And I guess that's to an 18-year-old self, but that's to anyone really. You know, if you can dream it and you can visualize it and you can, you know, see it and envision it. If you believe and put in the work, you can achieve it. So believe in it, you can achieve it. So that's what I would say to a younger self and any 18-year-old listening at the moment.
That is golden. Completely golden. Thank you, Theon. You have been an amazing guest to have on Artist Insights. We're so lucky to have you. Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thanks for the amazing questions. This has been a great chat. So thanks for having me.
Welcome. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to learn more about Yamaha and our artists, please do tell your friends about the show and subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. We'll see you next time for another episode of Artist Insights with Yamaha.